Hello, I'm Mark Steele, and this is Mark Steele's In Town, a Radio 4 programme where I do a show about a town to people in that town. And this time I'm in Leith. Thank you very much, good people of Leith. This show is about Leith. And although it is technically part of Edinburgh, it is really, obviously, a separate place. And at the moment, Leith is even challenging Edinburgh as a centre for the arts. Because Leith has recently had one of the biggest art installations in the world called the Bodged Tram Fiasco. Involving a cost of about £250 trillion, in which 600 holes have been put outside every single shop, making driving down Leith like crossing a series of checkpoints in occupied France, in the pretense that it was for a tram system, but this has now been abandoned, so we can only assume that it was always just a giant work of art that is now going to be entered for the Turner Prize. And some critic will turn up on the culture show going, I mean, just look at the half-dug crevices, the closed-down junctions, the unfathomable diversion around Pilrig Street. It just makes us reevaluate our whole attitude towards colour and space and disruption. The bit of Leith that people probably know best of all, if they're from outside the area, I would guess, is Leith Walk, which is the road that goes from Prince's Street at one end and you turn the corner, you go into Leith Walk and then down towards the docks. And it is, I think, one of the most brilliant roads in Britain because almost every shop there is a surprise. There's Borland's. What a brilliant shop. That's been there for decades and sells two things, which are, good people of Leith. Obviously, I should have cued you as to which one to say first, because that was a bit confusing. It sells darts and televisions. What a genius business idea. I mean, when you think about it, it is the obvious question when someone buys a television to say, would you like a dart to go with that? The bloke in there must be just the most brilliant salesman of all time. There must be people all over Leith going, I only went out for a dart and I've come back with a 42-inch plasma television. There's a record shop called Elvis Shakespeare. There's a... where they have gigs like Beatles style just outside the shop. There's the Sikh cafes. At one point there was a Polish shop called Polish Smack, which is... I mean, what a brilliant name for a shop. They clearly hadn't done all their research. Must have spent all day long, Norway don't have any bloody heroin. We got 11 type of sausage, but none of these skag. Oh, sorry, that's just the name of the shops. Confuse me, man, huh? Leith had Britain's first Dutch-style dope-selling coffee shop, the Purple Haze. But the owner was arrested and fined £500, so he packed up and went to get a job in Amsterdam instead. And it just goes to show that you can be absolutely thorough with your business plan and still something unexpected pops up, doesn't it? Who could have predicted that selling illegal drugs would turn out to be illegal? There's a cycle shop down there called Leith Cycles that had a hole outside for so long that once the hole was there for a year, they gave it a birthday party. And in any case, cycling, believe me, I tried this, cycling down there is almost impossible. A travel charity called Sustrans declared Leith Walk was, I quote, a nightmare, one of the worst streets in the whole UK for cycling. And that's quite an honour when you consider the other ones were the M1, the M6 and Spaghetti Junction. There's a magnificent irony in this because Chris Hoy has lived in Leith. And when you think about it, this does make sense, because if he can cycle down Leith Walk, 6 gold medals must be a doddle. Best of all, though, round the corner from Leith Walk is the magnificent Port of Leith pub. This is the pub that serves the sailors and the dockers. There was a bloke in there told me the police came in once because these kids had gone down to the docks and they got in their dinghy and they started floating out to sea. So the police went and rescued them and they said, do you know where your dad is? And they said, he's in the Port of Leith. So the police came in and they said to the kids, which one's your dad? And one of them said, is the one dancing on the bar in a pair of PVC shorts? So at this point, I'd like to introduce someone who, as far as I can work out, is probably the biggest celebrity in the whole of Leith. Far, far greater celebrity status than anyone appearing at the festival. Mary Moriarty. Mary, what was your role in the Port of Leith?
I was a person that did all the work, I think.
So it's a lively pub, isn't it?
Yes,
it's not really
very
a pub
lively.
If you want to sort of go and sit.
25 years of great fun, and I love Leith. And I was just going to tell you that I usually feel I'm going to have a nosebleed if when I pass John Lewis's, and I can't get back to. And I can't get back to Leith quickly enough, but just because this handsome, very handsome Londoner asked me to come here tonight, yeah. I thought, I'll not have a nosebleed.
So the stories that I've heard from the port, it's almost like every night there could be a series of stories from there. But sometimes people sort of go, there was a sort of naturist that seemed to go there, or someone who went there once who seemed to...
Yes, that was Mark. I thought he might have come along tonight, but he's obviously ashamed. But he an ex-soldier, former soldier, and he took all his clothes off. I never noticed that he'd taken all his clothes off. Until the customers who were sitting opposite the bar, it started pointing at him like that. And I thought, what's wrong? So I went round, said, come on, Mark, at least put your knickers on. And he took them from the chair and put them on his head.
Smart, but, casual.
Yeah. Wasn't being, what would you call it?
Lewd.
Lewd, yes.
No.
Thank you. That's the word we don't know. In
it was being... if only the festival had any decency, it would give you your own show. I mean, you wouldn't... The trouble is, you'd never turn up, because it's past John Lewis. But thanks very much for Mary, for running the pub for... Historically, there's always been some bits of Leith that have been slightly prickly towards Edinburgh, as I think we found out. For example, the first history of Leith was written by Alex Campbell in 1827. According to a recent historian, it was more than a little prejudiced. He has no good word throughout the book for Edinburgh on any subject. Obviously, that was a long time ago and attitudes have changed, so I read this account from Mike Stevenson, who's a local community worker, writing this year. In the 70s, I was a community worker in Leith and got chatting to an octogenarian who said she'd only been to Edinburgh once in her life. On holiday. I asked her what she'd thought and she said, I hated it. Their Woolworths were so snobby. I mean, I'm fascinated at the mechanic. How can you live all your life in Leith and never come to Edinburgh? It's on the same hill. You've only got to take a wrong turning when you're walking and you accidentally drift into Edinburgh. If you miss your bus stop, you accidentally end up in Edinburgh. A whole life must have been dedicated to not going to Edinburgh. Can you pop out to get me some cat food? I'd go myself, but the wind might blow me to Edinburgh. And I'm scared of it with its snobby Woolworths. I often wonder if she changed her mind once Woolworths closed down, or she went, no, their Poundland's no better. Now, apparently this attitude goes back to the 1500s, when the rulers of Edinburgh passed a law that no one in Leith was allowed to trade in anything unless they became a burgess of Edinburgh. And according to the Life and Good Times of Leith, which I've got there to prove I don't make these things up, life in Leith was exciting, with a constant need to beware of Edinburgh. To beware, constantly. And this is the book that said the other one was ridiculous for having no good word to say about Edinburgh. Eventually, in 1833, Parliament granted Leith independence from Edinburgh, and there were these massive celebrations of independence and processions from the links up Leith Walk. Then in 1920, there was this vote that everyone seems to know about, a vote on whether Leith should amalgamate with Edinburgh. And the result was 5,357 in favour and 29,891 against. So naturally enough, Edinburgh Council ignored the result and Leith became part of Edinburgh anyway. The sneaky pigs. I think at least Saddam Hussein and Stalin had the decency to fiddle the results. They could do that with football when Hibs beat Hearts 7-0. Go, marvellous, another win for Hearts. I don't think we need bother with the actual numbers. Well played, the Jambos. Now, one effect of all this was that when I was being shown round Leith by various people, after each story, there seemed to be a reason to moan about Edinburgh. Like, we passed the town hall, and there was, I learnt about when the town hall was built, and then I was told, sneaky Edinburgh made us have the town hall there. What a daft place to put it. And then we'd the Scottish Parliament was going to be here in Leith, but typical of sneaky Edinburgh, they didn't want that. And eventually I thought I could mention just about any period of history. I could go ancient Egypt. The pharaohs wanted the pyramids to be built on Constitution Street, but sneaky Edinburgh wouldn't grant planning permission. But that's what they're like. The moon landings. Originally, they were going to land on Leith Walk, but sneaky Edinburgh brought in parking meters for rockets, and NASA went to the moon instead. The character of Leith clearly comes in a great part from its past as a port that made it at one point the fifth biggest town in Scotland, with its own shipyard and thousands of sailors and pubs like Fairleys that was known in the 1970s for two reasons. One is that there was a fair amount of prostitution, and the other because it had a particularly wild character who was in the bar. This is an account from one ex-Leither who now lives in London, who says, "Oh, Fairleys, what a dive. The governor had a huge puma in a cage. I liked drinking in Leith as it had character." Is this another thing you think is normal? You're more arty, I think, in Leith than you make out sometimes. Irving Welsh, who wrote Trainspotting, is from Leith. He couldn't be from Morningside, could he, Irving Welsh? Because then Trainspotting would have gone, "Choose canopies. Choose Lapsang Souchong, choose Jenner's, choose attire more fashionable than that, my girl, or I'll have to ask you to leave this particular branch of Woolworths." And there'd have been a bit called The Worst Toilet in Scotland, with a lady saying, "Oh, there was a wee chap jacking up in the lavatory. It was so embarrassing because I hadn't replenished the potpourri." I watched Trainspotting again, actually, before coming up here with my 16-year-old son, and I put a little message on Twitter saying, "What a sweet morning. I'm watching Trainspotting with my son. It's what bringing up kids is all about." And I should tell you, someone did reply immediately with a message that went, "That's good parenting. Always good to make kids aware of the dangers of Scotland." The Port of Leith. The Port of Leith is one of the pubs seen in Trainspotting. So sometimes, apparently, you get groups of tourists going in on a Trainspotting tour. And the barman was telling me that one day, one of these tours was in the pub, and a junkie come into the bar asking for money. And when he left, this American tourist went, "Oh, that's so neat that you have these actors doing that for the tour. It makes it look so real." The reason that there was such a tussle over Leith was mostly because of the wealth that came in through the docks. And this was known from the 1500s, which is why this book, if I can find it, Leith at Random, proclaims, "Britain became a great attraction for pirates, and some of the most feared of these came from Leith." You sure that's something you want to boast about? So then for centuries, Leith's docks were one of the most lucrative parts of Scottish industry, and for some reason everyone that worked there was known by a nickname. I met George in the Dockers Club, and he was telling me about his mate called Huddy Box, because he stood on a haddock box, and in the end George couldn't even remember the bloke's actual name. And I was reading about one docker who used to say, "Leave it to me," so he became known as "Leave it to me." And it could obviously be quite rough there at times. There's an account of this in this book, the voices of Leith dockers. This was his account.
I was told to put a rack in the chain, and I didn't ken what it meant, or my mate didn't ken either, so I went to the cafe and asked if anyone ken how to put a rack on the chain. And this guy says, when you get back, ask for a guy called Stamp on the Bacon. He's the one to show you. So I went back and I asked for Stamp on the Bacon, and bang! He hits me in the eye. He says, I'm Stamp on the Bacon, but don't call me Stamp on the Bacon. What do you want? I said, I want to learn to put a rack on the chain. So he showed me, and then he said, now look at the state of your eye. So I went back to her work. I was told, put a rack on the chain now. So I did it, and then I felt bang! And my mate had given me a broken nose. And he said, that's for Ken who to put a rack on the chain when you told me you didn't, Ken. Ah, they were great days. But none of this is as weird as the tale of William Merrylees. Do people know who he is? William Merrylees was a detective who went undercover and raided illegal nightclubs. But his most famous case, according to a paper called The Old Leather, was when, I quote, in 1940 he captured the German spy Werner Vauti in Waverley Station while dressed as a baby in a pram. And in case anyone reading this thinks that that might sound implausible, it then explains, Merrylees was only 5'4". Because if you're 5'4", it's quite easy to carry yourself off as a baby. People, you do know of this story. You taught this story in school. I mean, if it's true, why didn't we do this at Normandy then? It would have been much safer, wouldn't it? The German lookouts just going, there's nothing to worry about with these boats coming to the Omaha Beach. There's no one on them except a few thousand babies. But Leith, if you spend any time in Leith, I think you can believe that this is one of the places where this sort of thing can happen. Because it's a mixture. Leith is a mixture of old industrial Britain with the industry clearly gone. And on the other hand, a crazy squat. For example, there's this story from the 70s. In a block in Buchanan Street off Leith Walk, there was a man living in the basement who declared that internal walls aren't cool. So with a heavy hammer, he knocked them all down, cracked the structure of the building, and all 200 flats had to be demolished. You know how to have a laugh, don't you? Edinburgh Council were apparently furious, as you can imagine, because it fancy having to deal with an idiot that's disrupted the lives of hundreds and hundreds of locals for a building project that ended up costing millions that was obviously doomed to be utterly pointless. What sort of idiot would do such a thing? One of the most marvellously eccentric concepts of all in Leith, I think, is Hibernian Football Club. Hibs have always been the Leith team as opposed to Edinburgh's hearts. And at one time, Hibs did reach the semi-final of the European Cup. They even inspired Pelé, it is said. But, yeah. So it is said. Not by Pelé. In truth, Leith obviously has been a vital area in artistic history. Eduardo Palazzo, the sculptor, lived in Leith, having come through the docks from Italy. There's the Proclaimers. Literature was transformed in Leith, not just by train spotting, but by a magazine, Rebel Inc., that Irvin Welsh wrote for, along with Kevin Williamson. And Kevin's here somewhere. So, yeah, can you tell us what Rebel Inc. was, first of all?
It was a magazine. which a group of writers... We were based around about Robbie's Bar, and we just sort of met up. And
it's quite revolutionary in the world of publishing, though, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think we did a lot of things that were quite different from the other publishing magazines at the time, you know. And after one night in Robbie's, we decided that we'd impregnate one of the copies with LSD. And
LSD and on the magazine? Like giving out free, like a comb with Jackie.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And of course... We put it into John Menzies, so the one that was impregnated said, John Menzies have actually sold LSD in the 90s. But you know, we were just having a bit of a laugh, really, like, as well, yeah.
Thanks very much, Kevin.
But now Leith is very clearly a mixture of its industrial past and then this sort of modern fancy stuff. The docks where sailors and dockers got drunk in bars with strippers are now restaurants and hotels and waterside flats. And some people don't seem to be aware that it's changed. A taxi driver took me down to the bottom and dropped us off by the Malmaison Hotel and said, "There you go, downtown Bosnia." Not seeming to have noticed that anything's different from 20 years ago. He must think, I wonder why so many tourists want to come down to the docks these days. Maybe they've been sent down here as apprentices to rack a chain. There's more, of course, than restaurants and hotels at the old docks. There's the Ocean Terminal, which is... which is just like any other shopping centre with its Costa Coffee and WH Smith and its Waterstones, except for one thing, that you go through it to get to the Royal Yacht Britannia. And once you're on this Royal Yacht Britannia, you can then look out on deck and take in the glorious nautical vista of Debenhams and a multi-storey car park. There's talk of a new one being built now because that one isn't adequate. But, to be fair to the Royal Yacht, however expensive, it has come at a fraction of the cost of the most spectacular effort to waste money in Leith on the magnificent tram system, unique in modern traffic transport infrastructure, in that involves all the inconvenience of installing a tram system, but without ever bothering to put in the trams. It's a novel approach. It's a novel approach to building, but it could catch on. People will start getting builders round to just dig holes in the living room, take the windows out, disconnect the toilet, and then say, we're not having anything put in, we just enjoy the disruption. And I should warn anybody coming to Leith not to ask anyone at all about the trams, because the answer you will get is just a 2-second stare, followed by, "They're a bloody disgrace, it takes me 45 minutes now to get to Great Junction Street every day, and the cost goes up another £500 million every half an hour, and why do we need them? There's a 22 bus every 10 seconds, and the only way, to get to the Launderette now is by helicopter. None of these councillors live near these roadworks, because they all live on the Royal Yacht Britannia. I'll tell you what, it would have been cheaper to move every single one of us to Hawaii." So, overall, Leith, I've been surprised. I have been genuinely surprised by Leith. And there is still a community. There's no doubt about that. I know the old community has been destroyed with the docks and so on, but there is a new community. There is a spirit that's carried on to a new generation. It's not the same as when it was dominated by the docks, but there's magazines. There's the... Every single bar down Leith Walk is mad in a slightly different, brilliantly chaotic way. I went to the Drill Hall Theatre thinking it would be a nice little community project for experimental origami or something, and it's not... huge packed thing, so big that they have trapeze artists in there to practice in. There's bands and there's events. There's a Polish community, a Sikh community. It's multicultural enough that in my book Memories of Leith, there's a recipe in there for haggis pakora that with ingredients of 1 tablespoon of garam masala, 1 tablespoon of ajwan seeds, 1 haggis. You've got one of those famous writers in Britain who's recently written another novel, in fact, about Leith, an even more harrowing sequel to his most famous work called Tram Spotting. And so I will leave you, good people of Leith, with the beginning. Choose Leith. Choose a big television, then choose a set of darts. Choose Hibs, choose a car and park it overlooking the Queen. Choose a Woolworths where they don't sneer at you for selecting an inappropriate combination of toffees in your pick and mix. Choose 3-star restaurants boasting exotic menus that still aren't as exotic as the bar it replaced because that had a puma in it. Choose pubs where smart dress code means PVC shorts. Choose singing launderettes. Choose detectives that shop at Mothercare. Choose banana flats. Choose potholes.
So that.
Choose Leith.